Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A madman podcast called Pod Yourself a Gun. A rewatch podcast, but season 3 of Mad Yourself a Man, where we go through every single episode of Mad Men and talk about it. That's right. We have the most impossible to find podcast feed if you only love Mad Men. But if you love TV rewatch podcasts in general, well, then that's how you have found us. And in order to help people find more of us, go to whatever podcast app store is where you got this episode and give us 5 stars, give us a review, comment on an episode, share it. Tell your friends and family, this is why you have not called to hang out with them. You're too busy hanging out with your real friends from the internet. Right?
That's us.
Yes, we're your best friends, and we want what's best for you. Stop doing all those drugs and start doing all those parasocial hugs with us. You know, we love you so much, but also, you know, it's parasocial. So if you see us in real life, don't
avert your eyes. I don't like it when people make eye contact with me. So
I mean, you can look away. You can look at me, but, you know, just don't. Don't be weird, you know?
What do you want from me, love?
Yeah, I won't give you that. I will not give you love the way that your parents will, but I will give you respect. So please say hi.
Which is more important.
Yes. And today we're going to be talking about from season 3 of Mad Men, episode 9, Wee Small Hours.
The most Irishly named episode of...
Quite Irish. Quite Irish. Also, I take a small little wee late at night. You know what I mean? The wee small hours for me are about 3 a.m. You know what I mean? Because I pee.
Yeah.
Always peeing in the middle of the night. I really hate it.
Stop drinking so much tea.
I don't drink tea. What I do is I chew ice from about 10 p.m. to midnight, and then I have to go pee. So I got to stop doing that. Also, my dentist said.
How does your wife
separate beds
live with you?
Separate rooms, separate houses.
I'm Matt. I only like things that are loud to chew.
Yeah, exactly. Anything soft for me is pussy. So yeah, please 5 stars in review. Patreon.com/Fratcast. Get yourself these episodes early. Get yourself a bonus episode every week where we talk about other things. All right. We have a wonderful guest today, a returning Pod Yourself champion. She is a TV writer, a comic, a critic, the host of the wonderful podcast TV I Say. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, it's Ashley Ray.
Hello. Hey.
Hey. How are you doing, Ashley Ray?
I'm so happy to be here talking about my favorite show.
I love it.
Your favorite. Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
I love that it's your favorite show. I love that, you know, when we ask you to be on and we offer, you know, hey, you know, if you need us to get you the episode, you're like, I have it on DVD.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Had it, like, I mean, I'm an OG fan. I actually was watching with a friend and I was like, oh, it's on AMC or it's on Philo. But
Philo?
It has commercials. Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
I mostly have it because you can watch Love After Lockup that way.
Oh, okay. Another
amazing show. Yeah.
Second favorite show.
Yeah, and she was like, watching Mad Men with commercials is crazy. And I was like, that's actually how we used to do it out every time.
Dude, yeah, that was the way that life was back in the day. It was just like...
But you DVR'd it and then you fast-forwarded it and then you...
if you were rich...
You would get your thumb really good at that play.
Mr. TiVo money bags.
I know. Yeah. Walking around here with your diamond playback button. Mm-hmm. Some of us...
I keep it in a pinky ring, like in a...
Yeah, you open up your pinky
on a pinky ring. That's right.
Oh no, I accidentally pressed the suicide button. Oh, why'd I get two rings? So Ashley, we asked you this before, but we're asking again, what are some of your favorite commercials?
I like a lot of commercials and I feel like there are quite a few good ones right now.
Oh, wow.
Right now. Which also people are usually like, what? You're watching commercials?
Yeah.
And yeah, I am. I don't want to pay for the Hulu without it.
Is there the one with like the cast of The Office, and then like the reveal is the guy who played Bob Vance? Is that one of your favorite commercials?
That one, it's okay. I'm not into gimmick advertising. Yeah, okay?
Same.
When they get the Modern Family cast together, it's like, I know you're just trying to sell me something.
Okay? And it's like, we only ever liked the show like a little bit. I don't think no one was like, "Ooh, Modern Family, the best show ever."
It was huge. A lot of people thought it was the best show ever.
Most people thought it was pretty good, and that's fine. But like,
I don't know that we were clamoring for a reunion. Yeah. Like,
sure.
Less than 6 years after it ended. Let's give it some time, guys.
Damn, did
I
it
not
only
a clamor one.
It didn't. I thought it ended a long time ago. 6 years ago it ended?
I feel like it was like right before the pandemic ended.
Wow. That's
like, I don't
crazy.
Think it's been a decade, and I need a decade.
At least.
Well, they had the last few seasons were very like Grey's Anatomy-esque, where you're like, I thought this show ended like 15 years ago.
But and there's just they were just like getting whatever person wanted to like have an appearance, and you'd just be like, oh, I guess in this episode she's dating some guy. Oh, she's dating Stamos. Okay.
Yeah. Am I crazy, or did Kobe Bryant make an appearance on Modern Family?
I wouldn't be surprised if he did.
I wouldn't be surprised.
That's crazy, because it was like he did Modern Family and then he died.
Yeah, let that be a lesson to everybody.
Let that be a lesson. So what if not, you know, gimmicky cameo ads, what kind of ads, you like modern ads, do you like?
You know, right now I'm really into different TV and movie pods, like just ads. I think they're doing some interesting things. TV comedy ads lately, they're doing this thing where they don't include jokes, and it's been so interesting to watch.
Yeah.
And so I love to like watch the and like see like what is the actual vibe of the show gonna be. I don't know. I'm really into the one for Task, if you watch that.
I haven't seen the ad for Task.
There's like this like mark, and if you have YouTube TV, they play this commercial every 30 seconds.
Mm.
And it's just like Mark Ruffalo going, if you want to be forgiven, all you got to do is ask. Which is like not, if you watch the show, is not.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with the show.
No, everybody was like, I would like to. And they're like, you cannot be. I can't do it. So,
I love it.
And then Peacemaker,
you
want to
be forgiven,
they have
all you
great
have to do
commercial.
Is task.
Hey, I like that.
That's good.
That's good, Vince. Mm-hmm. You're like the Don Draper of 30-second spots for TV shows about Delco accents. Have you watched Task at all, Ashley?
I've watched.
Oh yeah, I loved it.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
I haven't seen. I think I have. It did it end the last
finale was like a week, 2 weeks ago.
Okay,
it keeps making me remember that I have a like. Apparently, my thing is like weird Irish actresses. Because
which one?
Well, like the weird girl on there. I was like, why
is she Irish?
Irish?
Huh. Yeah. And I was like, oh, why do I like her? And then I'm like, oh, she reminds me of Jessie Buckley, another weird Irish chick. I don't know. I guess apparently that's my wheelhouse. I didn't
like
know.
Like from Ireland? Wow. Or are you talking about just
from
like
Ireland?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Look at that. You can tell.
That's cool.
And then I was like, oh, wait. Carrie She's Condon? Oh, no. Pale. I have a history of this. Why?
It's very interesting to me because I had no idea. There's like something about you where you have like, I don't know, you do phrenology, but for ethnic whites. Yeah.
No, I looked her up because I thought she was cute and I wanted to know her whole deal. And then I realized like, oh, this is like
you wanted
pattern.
To know her ethnicity. I see.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Oh, I need to know how to categorize her.
Yeah. You put it in your little notebook.
In case we ever meet, I have to know how to court her. Oh, potatoes.
Yeah, that'll work. But this is not a show about categorizing various beautiful women by their white ethnicity. No, this is a show about Mad Men. And we, of course, cannot start the show without first playing the theme song. Mad Man. Madman. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Mad. Man. Mad. Man. Mad.
Podcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, this is season 3, episode 9.
That's not a season 3. Is that the accent you're doing?
I guess it just happened. I don't know why.
I don't know why you did that either.
Season 3, episode 9, We Small Hours of the Night. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Betty tries to meet with Henry Francis again while Don steps up his pursuit of his daughter's former teacher. At the office, Don disappoints Conrad Hilton and is forced by a client to fire Salvatore over an unwelcome advance.
That's right. And we have a lot to say about all of those things
that happened.
But before we do, it's important to know the context of the time, what was happening at the time that this episode was set in.
That's Vince. Right, which we do with the thing that we call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent. That's news, isn't it?
That's right. We are going all the way back to October 11th, 1963, for an episode that aired October 11th, 2009, of course.
This on October 16th. 2025.
Dude, that's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
That's Libra season or something like that.
I don't even know.
Yeah.
It seems right.
Yeah. Probably. I'm taking you to the to New Orleans for the Times Picayune. I got a couple of articles here. First of all, US-USSR moon landing project forbidden.
Forbidden?
The House voted a $5.1 billion appropriation for the National Space Agency Thursday night, but said none of the money can be used to cooperate with Russia in sending a man to the moon. Its action was a rebuff to President Kennedy, who told the United Nations September 20th that the United States was willing to cooperate with Russia in a joint moon project if a suitable agreement can be reached. The ban on a cooperative moonshot was proposed by Representative Thomas M. Pelly, R. Washington, and was adopted by a standing vote of 125 to 110. It was supported heavily by Republicans and Southern Democrats, and 98 members did not vote at all.
When I tell you I want the moon, what I mean is I want only me to have the moon.
I want the moon for America, not
American
for
moon.
Not for Russia. Yeah.
No godless moon.
I mean, do you think the space race would have been like even more disastrous if we didn't have like to compete with Russia? Because I mean, we killed a lot of astronauts, but
I feel like we
and monkeys and dogs.
Monkeys, we killed
not,
dogs.
Not to say they're just as important, but you know,
but
they're you know, enough monkeys and dogs, that's like at least equals a person.
I think one dog is equal to one astronaut, and
it depends
that's
on that dog.
I mean, I just feel like dogs are nicer than astronauts, probably.
Yeah. If you're a dog that is an astronaut, you're probably like one of the best dogs.
Yes, you are for sure. I mean, you're definitely smarter than me.
They're not recruiting dumb dogs into the dog force.
Right next to this story, Ill McMillan to resign post. London, the scramble was on Friday for Prime Minister Harold Macmillan's job. McMillan, convalescing from a prostate operation, announced Thursday that he is retiring due to his disability.
Ill McMillan is such a cool rap name.
Yeah, it is true. It is true.
That is nice.
Oi, bruv, it's me, Ill McMillan. Coming up in these streets, making a million.
Nice.
I feel like I don't remember this guy from The Crown, so
I know. Who is
this? That important.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. Guy. Okay, so unofficially, odds were posted on the Tories considered to figure in the race to succeed the ailing, careworn 69-year-old chief of government and Conservative Party. I don't know what that sentence means. The first open contender, Viscount Hailsham, said he would quit the peerage in House of Lords to seek humbler but potentially potent membership in Commons.
Oh, I'm happy to quit the peerage,
Lord Hailsham's commoner or pre-peerage name was Quinton McGarrel Hogg, and he is expected to revert to it.
I'm going to go back to me family name of Hogg.
Yeah. I just like, I mean, this guy's 69 and he just had prostate surgery and they're like, well, obviously he can't be prime minister anymore. Yeah. Meanwhile, like today, yeah. Mitch McConnell is just like walking down a hallway and they're like, hey, what's up with ice raids? And he just fell down. He didn't
even... Oh, no.
I thought you said... Too startling.
Yeah. I thought you said there was ice on the floor, so I preemptively slipped.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like a reaction. He heard it and then he had his feet Ooh. Had like, yeah. sympathy sympathy slips.
Yes.
It's just crazy. I mean, it reminded me of the episode the other week where he's like, well, he hurt his foot. Obviously, he can't be an account man anymore.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Times were better when we fired people for disabilities.
Yeah. I mean, crazy. Like, you can't have prostate surgery? That doesn't seem like that crazy, but I don't know. I guess.
Come on. You got a weak prostate? How are you leading a nation?
Yeah, he's getting up to right. pee too many times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't make a speech right now. Oh. I'll go to pee-pee, yeah. I'll go to take a wee.
Speaking of good boys, I don't know that this story is going to contextualize the times very well, but it is a really good story, so I had to include it.
Oh, okay.
Boo-boo howls in disdain. Carmen halts in giggle.
Well, you're going to have to explain all of these.
I like how old headlines were like riddles, and you're like, oh, what is this? Huh, what is this troll want from me?
I'm trying to cross a bridge here. I got to read the rest of this article.
Yeah. The Sadler's Wells Opera was in tremendous voice last night and was rattling the rafters with Bizet's Carmen when a dog named Boo Boo joined the chorus. The sounds Boo Boo made were never envisaged by Bizet. Boo Boo just plain howled. Subheader, giggle sweeps theater. This was greeted by a giggle from someone in the front row. Laughter spread through the house, up into the royal circle, and into the galleries. The cast sang on bravely. The trouble was, Boo Boo did too. Boo Boo had volume. He's a Pyrenean mountain dog who eats 5 pounds of meat daily and weighs 130 pounds.
Who brings a fucking, like, mountain dog to the opera?
I thought it was like a dog got into the building.
Right.
It's like, well, if you have these details, no, this is someone's dog.
Yeah.
I will say, I've been to one opera in my life, and I feel like I would go to a lot more if I knew that there would be dogs there.
Yeah, especially dogs also singing.
Yeah. The audience laughter affected the cast. Carmen began giggling. Well, upstage, Boo Boo commenced scratching himself. This was too much. The opera giggled to an abrupt stop. Several things happened at once. From the audience, an athletic young man hopped on the stage. The athletic young man identified himself as Robert Watts, 24, a school teacher and owner of the dog.
Ah, well, that makes sense.
For me, it was life's most embarrassing moment, said Watts. Get him out of here, shouted a baritone.
I love it. In his beautiful baritone voice. Hey, get him out of here.
Dog.
Who brought the stupid dog?
But like, why? Okay, you're a teacher and you thought this was a good idea. Okay.
I know. This is, come on, man. Come on.
Out the stage door went Watts and Boo Boo. I don't live far from here, said Watts. Boo Boo must have followed me. He's a very intelligent dog, but he certainly didn't know I'd gone to the opera. Boo Boo's operatic career lasted 3 minutes.
I'm sorry. You didn't bring him? He followed you?
Mm-hmm. Followed him right to the opera.
Come on, man.
And right into the building? Like, what are you talking about? Come on.
I feel like the security at this building is very lax.
Yeah, well, this is the 60s, man. Everybody was just walking around saying hi to their neighbors and shit.
Yeah. Famously peaceful time between neighbors, the 60s.
Speaking of which... Girls' school hears speech by Madame New. Madame Nyo Ding Nyu went through another grueling round of engagements today in her effort to win American public support for the government of South Vietnam.
Oh, yes. Yes. We talked about her on a previous episode. She's like the beautiful, like South Vietnamese fascist.
She was. Yes, I think things have gone poorly for her, as this story seems to indicate.
Yeah.
At one point,
monks keep burning themselves.
Yeah. At one point, she verged on collapse. Rising to address 700 girls at Sarah Lawrence College in Bronxville, Mrs. New's body shook and her voice quavered. A doctor was summoned, and although he was not needed, he stood by during her speech. Madame New.
I love this diva, drama queen.
I know.
Oh, it gets better.
I breathe in too many monk fumes. Sorry, guys.
Are these monks Lothar?
Yeah. Oh, God. Lucky strikes, it's toasted.
Madame New, sister-in-law of Vietnamese President Ngo Dinh Diem, told the students that Americans should know that Vietnam does not intend to be a beggar of anyone. Subheading, she gulps pills. When the time is ripe, she added, Vietnam will be the first to request a cut in aid. Throughout her address, Mrs. New gulped pills.
What? During the address?
Yeah, it was the early 60s. That's like, true. That's what they expected women to do back then.
That's Listen, crazy.
If there was one thing that we knew how to do in mid-20th century America, it was how to pick a winner in a foreign country that was undergoing some internal conflict.
Slash how to medicate women for hysteria.
Yeah. And if you get those two things together, magic's going to happen.
Yes, absolute magic. Wow.
Miss New's daughter, Li Tui, assured college authorities that her mother's symptoms were indicative only of exhaustion. Very, very likely.
Yeah, sure.
Finally, I have an ad, and this, this is a show about advertising, and, you know, there's some failed products that didn't stand the test of time, and this seems to be one of those. This is an ad in the Chicago Tribune for the Twitter. New tandem sweater for two. Oh.
I love it.
Say that name again for me.
Twitter. Like it's okay. Two and sweater. A two sweater. The Twitter. Here's the most original idea in togetherness to come along in years. A his and hers sweater in one. The Twitter has two neck openings, but just two sleeves. Result? Cozy companionship on a campus stroll or at the game. Beautifully knit of
sorry, I'm just picturing this in my head, and how useless it is almost a wonder of the world.
It's like it designed only for people who are in gum commercials, I think.
Right. It sounds like it was designed for conjoined twins.
Mm. Yeah. And moms who have to punish their kids in their, you know, get along shirt.
Sure.
Yeah. Beautifully knit of machine or hand washable Orlon acrylic, fleecy soft and warm, strikingly striped in a choice of bright gold color or bright color combinations, scarlet white, scarlet black, black gold. You'll find the Twitter at the Baskin store nearest you in one fit all size, $25.
In one, it's one size?
Yeah. Okay. $25, that seems like much money for that time.
Back then.
Like $250.
That's like buy a house money.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's for two people. So.
Even so,
$5 a person.
I kind of want to look up the inflation on that.
Yeah,
what I think it's about 10-fold as we've learned.
So it's $250 for a sweater built for two.
That's right.
Yeah, about $270.
Dude, I went to New York recently, and it started raining like crazy, and I left my jacket somewhere, so I went to a random Brooklyn fucking store, and I was just like, oh, I need a jacket, and then they like brought out a bunch, and I was like, wait, how much are these? And they were like $500, and I was like, no, you don't do that to somebody.
No, you know what, you got to go to the hardware store. That's where I get most of my clothes these days.
You go to the hardware store for clothes?
Yeah, the Ace Hardware, they got a lot of cheap clothes.
They
That's great.
Some clothes there.
I had no idea.
I usually hit the thrift store. I like a good thrift store.
Yeah, no, thrift finds
are
great.
I don't live anywhere cool, so I got to drive a ways for the thrift store, but the Ace is
right
here.
You live in Fresno. That's cool enough.
Yeah.
So cool.
I love it.
I bet you got a good Goodwill there.
Yeah.
We do. It's just a ways away from my house where the Ace is just right there.
Oh, I got to start going to the hardware store for clothes. Maybe I can buy myself a Twitter. Okay, so that is the context, the cultural context of the time. And we're going to start talking about this episode. But first, here's a little taste of a song that is about this episode. What can I say other than listen to it and enjoy, I suppose?
Yes.
If Salvatore had a potion that he could take today, that made everybody less certain that Salvatore's gay, he'd look look hetero and swaggy. Make the women swoon.
So stupid.
Plus pussy, pussy, and boobs too. Too bad he's clearly gay. League of Honor Junior Corners.
All right, there's.
What's the rest of it? Let us get to the chorus at least.
Yeah, no. Kind of getting going.
It was just getting going, and you know, you just got to give it a little tease. Also, oh. This gives me time to finish the rest of it. But okay. The rest of it is the background band going. Too bad Sal is clearly gay. Too bad Sal is instead of Inside Outside USA. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is the final Salvatore Romano episode of Mad Men. Gone too soon, in my opinion. I have a lot of thoughts on this particular storyline. Let's just get our general thoughts right now. Vince, start us off. General thoughts on this episode.
Yeah, not the most satisfying as a standalone episode, but it's, you know, it keeps me on the hook. It keeps me going. It's furthering the themes. It's introducing some new stuff that's going to keep me watching. I would say the main themes of this episode is that, you know, America, we don't know what we want, but we're convinced that we're the main character. Also, Southerners are scary, clients are a pain in the ass, and Americans just want burger. I would say those are the...
Those are true.
That's kind of what we're working with here.
Yeah. Ashley, as someone who is a fan of this show, what are your general thoughts on this episode? You know, what storylines stick out to you? What do you remember?
Yeah. I obviously, for me, a big thing here is that Betty is going full adultery. Mm-hmm. This is when we're like, okay, she doesn't care anymore. She is all down to like... lie, do her thing. She's donning Don.
Yes.
And kind of doing a better job at it. And I also love that she did not have to do the fundraiser. She could have just been like, oh yeah, Carla, no, Don said no, so we're not doing it. But she knew what she was doing.
Yes.
She knew.
She and very so I much do, did.
I love where that whole story goes. But I, you know, at the time watching this episode live, it was so... it was an exciting one because nobody thought this would be the last time we saw Sal. Like
yeah.
At the time, it was like, obviously he'll come back at some point. So when it was like, oh no, that was really it. Rewatching it, it's far more disappointing because it's like, oh no, that really is the whole thing.
Yeah, it's strange. It's, yeah. I had the same thought. When I first watched it, I was like, okay, so... now we're going to kind of get a different version of Sal, you know.
Yeah, bathhouse Sal.
Yeah, like, you know, the final scene with Sal is him at a cruising park calling his wife saying he's going to be late, you know, because he's working late. So much is left, you know, unsaid. So, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with his wife and all that. And you kind of watch it going like, well, certainly they're going to answer these questions. Spoiler alert for those who haven't seen a 20-year-old show. They don't. That is the last Sal scene. And I...
that's crazy.
I don't know how I feel about it because it's one of those things.
He adds a lot to the show. He's such a good actor.
Yeah, he was such a good character.
And it's funny just, I don't know, watching him... be mad that people can tell he's gay, like yeah.
I love when the Lucky Strike guy is like making his move and Sal in the gayest tone ever goes, I have a wife.
Yeah.
I have a wife. It's like, okay, Sal, yeah, like, come
he's
on.
Like, so do I. Yeah, that scene is like it's so heartbreaking to watch because we've seen a few different scenes with Sal in which he is directly confronted with his sexuality. And like, depending on who's doing it, obviously it's different. First time we see it, he's talking to someone who is, I believe it was whatever lipstick company they were working with. It was like their head of creative, you know, it takes him out to drinks and whatnot. And it's like, come on, you're gay.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's still a little bit in denial.
He thinks he's passing. So when people point out that he's not, he's like, oh!
Yes, exactly.
How dare you?
He's like, I'm a big, burly ad man.
Yes, yeah. I just love musical theater. Like, what? I'm just Italian.
I'm as butch as the day is long.
Yeah. And you know, the other time you see him, it's when he gets sort of caught by Dawn, where he like is hooking up with a bellhop in L.A. or I forget where they were. Baltimore. Baltimore. That's where they were.
Baltimore.
Yeah. And, you know, and
he got bald in Baltimore.
At that time, he kind of like let it happen because it was just like, you know, it was a hot bellboy. He was out of town. Like all of the like, you know, all the stars aligned for him to finally express his sexuality. Only for it to immediately the alarm sounded, the gay alarm sounded, and everyone had to go out to the street. And of course, Dawn saw him like putting a shirt back on.
He has to be full of so much cum right now. Like,
God.
He's got to be just like sweating it.
Imagine that coming out of first, that first time cruising. He like, somebody died.
God, and it's like, those are the stories I wanted to see.
Me too.
You know, why am I seeing Harry Crane's whatever? I don't care.
I know. It's really sad, you know. So this last time, Lee Garner Jr. is the, you know, head of the, essentially the head of the Lucky Strike and the
account. Love this character. I feel like the actor does an amazing job, but I also feel like in the context of the show, like the South, and you really see it in this episode, like the South keeps coming up, and I feel like the way they see the South as like the dark id of America, where it's like everybody else, you know, they're content, they're allowed to see themselves as the good guy, because like, oh, we believe in God, not like those dirty Soviets. We're the good guy, we're the baby face. And then the South is like, nah, we're the bad guy, and we're okay with that, unlike you phonies up there. And so this guy is just scary, like in a bunch of different ways to all these people.
Yeah. I mean, he corners Sal, and like in this scenario, it's scary for him because this is the, you know, first time he's dealt with something that could affect his entire livelihood. So
he also doesn't know if this guy's going to try to fuck him or kill him. Like, this guy could seems like he could go either way.
He was grabbing on him, but we're not sure what he wanted.
We don't know where this could go.
It's like the words are nice, but he seems like he's about to kill me. Yeah. He's got that like dead-eyed, so drunk that he might be a murderer, Jeffrey Dahmer type thing going on.
Yeah.
Like, or he maybe wants to go find some women to murder. You don't know what vibe you're getting with him.
And it's really sad, you know, that this ended up being the last Sal episode. Like, I have never, you know, read a behind the scenes or an oral history of anything. I would be interested in what exactly happened here, because it does feel particularly strange. Like, at the time, I remember thinking, like, well, that's an interesting way of doing it, where it's like, you know, you get fired from this job and we just never see you again. But that does not carry on throughout the series. There are people who get fired who we do see again. Paul Kinsey, for example, we see again.
Like, who was like, oh, I hope Kinsey turns out okay? Not a single person.
Nobody wanted him to be fine. It was like...
No, but his foibles are humorous in the same way that Pete's are.
Sure. But it was, you know, it's like... if we're going to get a What Happened with Kinsey episode, give us a What Happened with Sal, because it's like, you know, you kind of just want him to be okay and never finding out what happened. I don't know. It feels, part of me wants to say that feels like a scheduling conflict. Like, they were going to do one, but then they couldn't.
And it's also odd because, like, in later seasons, they go into a lot of, like, homosexuality with Peggy and all this stuff. So it seems like at some point someone would be like, oh, hey, this would be a good connection with Sal.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and I constantly was like, oh, she's going to run into Sal somewhere in the gay scene.
Exactly, exactly.
And nope, it just never happens. And it's the strangest thing. And I don't think they've ever kind of explained it anywhere in...
Yeah, it's... I mean...
I have a little bit... I was reading a little bit about why he doesn't come back.
Please.
So the actor's name is Brian Batt, which I like. I'm just going to call him Sal Romano because it's such a better name.
It's a great
name. In an article for Esquire, Bat described how showrunner Matthew Weiner had originally intended to continue Sal's role on Mad Men. Bat relates that numerous times Sal told him this was the course for the character, but that he shouldn't worry, Sal would come back. Bat isn't able to provide evidence, but suggests that he believed that Wiener was being earnest and that Sal was, at one point, expected to return to the series. One popular theory at the time was that Sal would return as a big-shot film director. The storyline never occurred, however, leaving Sal's life at Sterling Cooper a mystery following Mad Men's ending.
Oh, see? I mean, wow. I totally believe that Matthew Wiener was going to bring him back, because it just they left the storyline so open that it's like it just felt obvious that we were gonna get an update, but we never do. Unfortunately, it is you know, that this is the last Sal episode, and unfortunately this season is set in 1963 and I couldn't find a good enough song to do where I could listen. I make those really fast, so I could serve in USA is the best I could do. But
it's good.
Yeah, hey, you'll love it when you hear the rest of it. You're gonna be like, wow, look at all the harmonies on Too Bad Sal is Clearly Gay. So just getting into this episode, we've already started with Sal, so let's just talk about that. What happened with him is so tragic because Lee Garner Jr. fucking sucks. Yeah. He is, I think, their biggest account.
Yes.
And so
I think at one point he says, without them, it could sink us. Like, yeah. I think they're a $10 million account. Like,
yeah. $25 million, he says.
25, which is like insane.
Even more than 10.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, we see him, at one point in the, you know, the scene where Dawn basically scolds Sal, we see Sal say he's a bully, and it's true, because the very first scene with Lee Garner Jr. is him peer pressuring Pete to smoke a cigarette, and it is just, there's something so funny about that scene to me, where he's just Pete is so clearly scared to do it because he thinks he's like allergic or something. I have that clip.
I'm telling you, it's bad for me.
What's that supposed to mean?
And he's just coughing the rest of the
hate the scene so much.
I loved it.
Cause I'm like, how fucking much are they gonna, I hate people coughing like in movies and TV.
Oh, okay.
Like, I mean, it's bad enough to listen to someone cough like in real life, but
oh,
when
God.
We're doing it in fiction and then we're just like overdoing it, this he coughs through that entire fucking scene. I'm like, yeah. All right, give it a rest. This is like when I watch Benjamin Button and Kate Blanchett playing the old version of herself keeps coughing like every two lines. Like, when actors do that, it's like, all right, dude, we get it already. Like, you don't need to keep doing it. Like, this we got it.
This feels like a very Vince like issue.
Yeah.
It's awful to listen to.
Like,
it's awful.
This reminds me of my older brother, who, if I ever had a fit of sneezing or coughing, he would just go, stop! As if that would help.
Well, it's like phones ringing. Like, when the phone rings once, we're good. When the baby cries like once, we're good. We don't need like just this assault of irritating noises.
It helps us envision how harsh it is. How
Also, I didn't believe it. Like, Steve, like, Pete's not going to cough that much from one puff of a cigarette. He's going to cough for like 2 minutes straight.
I love that. He's a bitch. I like everything about that is hilarious to me.
I got that he's a bitch from like one cough. Like, we didn't need to gild the lily there. Jeez.
Well, I thought it was great. And you see that they are directing an ad for Lucky Strike in which a sailor is looking looking out into the distance.
Oh, I thought it was that like scene, a cowboy.
That scene reminded me of like when we did the podcast with Halpern and his dog kept barking and then like the sirens were in the background.
Yeah,
like we
right.
kept having like different loud things.
And then
happen.
A baby
like,
cried.
I thought it was like a bit.
Yeah. So they're trying to direct this thing. Sal is doing a great job. And Lee Garner Jr. has got all these like comments about what they should be doing. You know, what is he looking at over there? And he's like, he's looking out into the distance. It's a 1,000-yard stare. And he's like, he should look directly at the camera. and Harry just wants to give him what he wants. He's like, yeah, sure, do that. And it's very interesting because you see Harry kind of continuing his nervous engagement with Lee.
Well, also, I mean, Sal is trying to direct a commercial that passes, and Lee Garner wants a commercial that stands out. So that's
right.
Like, you know, that's their character. And then you got Harry, who I feel like his entire character is the fact that he wears a bow tie. Like they made him a bow tie guy, and it kind of says everything about him.
That's
all you
true.
Need to know about him.
Yeah. He wears a bow tie.
Just bumbling. Almost immediately when you realize, like, oh, he's just going to ignore what Lee said. He's not even going to try to be like, yo, Don, like, heads up. They would have been like, just Sal, like, hide for a few days.
I know.
Fine.
I know. That's, I think this all fits into the, like, that feeling of, well, certainly they're going to bring him back because there's so many ways this could have been avoided. And there's not a lot of emphasis on that in the show. You know, like the fact is you're watching it going like, yeah, if Harry had just said, Sal, he doesn't want to work with you. We're going to hide you so that when he comes in, you know, he won't know that you're fucking here. He probably will forget all about it. But instead, that doesn't happen. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, the scariest kind of drunk is the drunk that remembers their blackouts.
Yeah.
Which applies to like both Connie and Lee Garner. And then
that's right.
And then, you know, Harry Crane is the ultimate bow tie guy where he's like, he's incompetent, kind of emasculated, but like secretly has reactionary politics.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Every bow tie guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we see Lee Garner Jr. Looking at, like, you know, the footage with Sal, and he's telling Sal that, like, you know, when his father passes, he wants to get into the movies, you know, he wants to start making movies or whatnot. And then he, like, immediately is like, can you forget I said that? Don't tell my dad. I'm sorry. I'm just drunk. He says I had a long, wet lunch.
It's a disgusting phrase.
I know. Everything.
Disgusting.
Matt's mom's nickname in high school.
Fuck you. Fuck you, dude. These are three of the worst words to put next to each other.
Long, wet lunch.
Long, wet lunch.
Disgusting.
It sounds like some sort of regional delicacy.
Right.
You know, like some sort of...
Like sloppy steaks?
Yeah, like some sort of disgusting open face sandwich that they have in like Toledo or something.
Come to Toledo for your long, wet lunch. And then he makes a move on him, you know, pretty much as soon as, you know, the guy, the editor, leaves the room. And I have that scene.
He's not coming back for a while. I'll lock the door.
I'm married.
So am I.
There's been a misunderstanding.
I know what I know.
Few moments later.
It's that Salvatore fella, the director.
He's no good. I'd like him gone.
So,
yeah. So another thing about that scene, I like the way that closeted gay men flirt with each other by telling them like how many chicks they're getting. Like before, because in between long wet lunch and him propositioning him, he was like, you know, these secretaries, they just can't take no for an answer,
right?
And you're like, what does that look like in practice?
Yeah. And Sal's like, oh, I don't have a secretary.
Yeah, Sal is all business, and in that scene, you can actually. Maybe I'm projecting, but I was feeling his discomfort with being alone with this guy. Just the way that this guy was talking to him, talking about women and all of that, talking about, you know, secretaries. And I felt like Sal was really trying to telegraph, I'm all business, sir. And of course, Lee was not listening, which is, again, another reason why I'm like, this is too unfair to not get a Sal update. But And so later you just heard him calling Harry and telling him we need to get rid of Sal. And Harry is essentially able to weasel his way out of continuing the conversation. And, you know, he doesn't like commit to anything. And he just tells Kinsey, he's really drunk. He'll forget about this whole thing. And he very much does not forget about this whole thing.
I like your theory that if he would have just not had Sal in the meeting, he probably would have forgotten.
Yes.
Yeah, he would have forgot. Like if he had gone to, you know, Roger and been like, here's the situation. Roger would have been like, oh, the client doesn't want him there. Accounts, don't put him there. That's our job.
Right.
To think about those things.
Yeah. And like Roger says as much in like a really funny way in the scene where, Lee Garner shows up, immediately sees Sal, and then turns around. He says this to Harry.
He was really drunk. I thought it would blow over. I didn't even think he'd remember.
When you get in trouble, you call mommy and daddy.
I wouldn't say a word. He just left.
Sal, you're fired.
It's just like, when you get
Roger
in trouble.
Is mommy and Don is daddy.
I love when you get in trouble, you call mommy and daddy. Oh, man. But yeah, and he fires him on the spot. And, you know, it's like one of those moments where you don't fully take it seriously because it all happens so fast. And they immediately go into Dawn's office to fix it. And
great shot. I think that's my favorite shot of the episode, where they're like, when Harry and Sal are talking to Dawn's secretary and they're like, we need to speak to Dawn. And she's like, what is this about? And Dawn just like leans over. He's like, I can see and hear you.
Yeah. What do you want? Yeah. So they go in, and Harry is kind of, you know, taking responsibility for all this because he is, you know, afraid of getting fired. He, of course, doesn't know any of the details. All he knows is that Lee Garner wanted him, got drunk, called him, said, fire this guy. He is, you know, dismissed, and Dawn and Sal speak alone in a scene that is, like, so enraging as a
viewer.
You
think, it's so great because it's like you think Dawn is going to be nice to Sal because he's been like sort of accepting, and like, I mean, he doesn't clearly doesn't care about the gay thing, or that was the impression that we got.
Yeah, like he's like, everybody has secrets, and right, like, okay, he's gonna be like, yeah, just hide out for a bit.
But then there's, like, you know, the reason that he's a dick in this is because he's tired. He didn't get enough sleep, so he can't.
The
whole thing is that he's tired. He can't be like a good guy because he didn't get enough sleep.
He's not getting any sleep.
He's cranky.
Because the Hilton is like calling him constantly. And then he's like driving and giving rides to school teachers who are running way too late at night. This is still serial killer times.
Yeah.
And what are you doing, lady? It was so dark outside.
Yeah.
So he's tired.
He's tight. And also, I think for him, this, like, he may not really care if someone is gay. What he does care about is discretion. If you're not good at hiding your, you know, sexual deviancy, whether it be being gay or being a cheater or whatever,
killing women in your closet.
Like, I think he would be accepting of everything as long as you always present yourself to the public as a good thing, as like a upstanding citizen. Like, I think he would be like, mostly Ted Bundy was sick. Like, he was a good dude and he just, you know, fucked up by getting caught. Like, Dawn is disgusted, and you see his like homophobia coming out in this, in that he's like, you motherfuckers can't keep it in your pants. And I have
he
that
says you people, and it's like, yeah, does he mean it's gays, like, you can tell Italians, what is he?
Yeah, you can tell he basically is like, Sal must have been the one who started this.
Yes.
And then like Sal is like, well, what if it was a woman? And he goes, depends on what I know about the girl.
Yes.
And
exactly.
I was like, that is some classic misogyny.
Yeah.
You just go across the board, I'm gonna slut shame.
Yeah, so. He slut shames Sal. It's fucking crazy. I gotta play the scene because it's just so, I don't know, it's so out of left field.
Sal, something must have happened.
We had a misunderstanding.
Jesus, I'm not going to ask again.
He was drunk. And he cornered me in the editing room.
Cornered you?
And I backed him off. I told him I was married, and he was embarrassed, and he left.
But nothing happened, because nothing could have happened, because you're married.
Don, I swear on my mother's life.
You sure you want to do that? Who do you think you're talking to?
I guess I was just supposed to do whatever he wanted? What if it was some girl?
That would depend on what kind of girl it was and what I knew about her. You people. Lucky Strike can shut off our lights. I think you know that this is the way this has to be.
Oof. I mean, like, everything about that scene was just so hard to watch because, you know, it's like, Dawn, as a character, he doesn't exist in that like anti-hero space the same way, like, I don't know, fucking Tony Soprano does. Like, whatever bad things Dawn does is like, he's abusive or whatever. You know, he's a cheater. He's a liar. He's all those things, but he's not like, he's not murdering anybody or whatnot. In that scene, you're just like, wow, what a fucking hateful prick, you know?
It was just because he's tired. Yeah. He's too tired. He's too tired to not hate gay people.
Man. I mean,
Ken is like his wife is like about to cheat on him. And even when she's like, oh, you know, I have to do this fundraiser. He's like, as long as I don't have to fucking go. Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All he cares about is that sweet teacher poon. That's his focus.
Making Connie happy. And if not, making Mrs. Horny happy.
I'm going to go back to it again, but I think it's important that the main antagonists in this episode are the like ex-hillbilly Connie and like the southern guy, Lee Garner. Because I mean, you know, like this whole show is so much about like American society in the 60s, like at the height of American prestige. So it's sort of about like, oh, you know, you guys are the USA, you guys have the Marshall Plan, you're presenting yourselves as this like sophisticated, like benevolent force, but like in the back of your mind, you know, you're still that like ex-hillbilly who drinks moonshine and killed a bunch of Indians, and like the southern planner who like tries to strong arm people sexually and has slaves and all that stuff. It's like the southern people and the hillbillies are like they're the reminders of like Dawn's past.
I think they do a good job actually of showing that it isn't just the southerners and that there's this northern hypocrisy with Betty's whole thing. And
no, they remind the northerners who they really are.
Yeah. Right. And I think like out of the scene where the little girl, oh my God, I can't believe Sally is like trying to boss her around, and she's like, Carla works for me.
Yeah.
Right. It's
just
one of the like Carla kind of heaviest episodes where you're kinda like, okay, she's starting to recognize like this dynamic, and this is finally Betty like realizing eventually like, oh, I have power over this woman. She, and there can be no situation where she like has any sort of power over me or could be a threat to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't say like, hey, don't talk to Carla like that. She says, no, you don't own Carla. I do.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I can talk to her like that.
And in that scene in particular, she is also reminding Carla of that, because Carla has just become privy to a secret of Betty's.
Yeah, Carla is the Harry in this storyline.
Yeah.
Like, she knows a thing against her will, and she's like, I hate that you've cursed me with this knowledge, and I know you're going to be shitty to me because of it.
Right. Yeah. And
like,
also,
I don't care if you want to talk to your old white guy, like live your life, girl.
Yeah. And the like, you know, the other scene that happens with Betty and Carla, you see Betty and her friends at the fundraiser all talking about how like, you know, in the South, it's 1863. And then, of course, Betty immediately hands a tray to to Carla, who's standing right there. And you're just like, you know, you know that they all feel really fucking like smug about being like, you know, northern moralists or whatever. Mm-hmm. And of course they know what they are. They
don't have to
see,
they don't have to come face to face with it. They're Pete's like they're getting all the benefits without having to, you know, get their hands dirty and smoke the cigarettes.
Yeah. They're like, but I'm a good person. And the last scene with Sal is Sal, making that phone call in a gay cruising park. And he's telling his wife not to wait up for him, and he's also telling the viewers, don't wait up for me.
Don't wait up for
I am going to be in this cruising park getting my dick sucked for the rest of the series.
For the rest of his life,
that's all we can assume, is that he's still to this day at this park just being like, I kind of just landed here and never look back.
If you're worried about Paul Kinsey, don't worry. He becomes a TV writer.
Yeah, don't worry. It's all going to be fine. Paul Kinsey's going to show up later. Oh, God. Yeah. So, is this producer Brent?
You know it is. We should stop for ads.
Well, we must do that. So, everyone, please stick around, listen to these ads, and we'll be right back. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, you know, it feels like summer just barely ended.
I'm still writing summer on all of my checks.
Yeah, me too. But already I've been walking around my beautiful neighborhood in Los Angeles, and I'm already seeing like Halloween and Thanksgiving stuff all over the place.
Oh, the holidays sneak up so fast.
They do. But you know what? One thing I've learned is it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it.
Oh, that's so good to know. One thing I've found is that Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else.
That's right. Uncommon Goods isn't just like any online tchotchke store you can find by Googling onlinetchotchkestore.com. No, Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, and because they're made in small batches, the best finds can sell out fast.
Yeah, I liked this mason jar indoor herb garden, which were some vintage-inspired planters that I can grow my own herbs in. I put them out there on my kitchen sun shelf, and now
that's
I have
right. You do have a beautiful fresh, like herb garden right there in on your sun shelf.
That's right, I do. That's where all the herbs grow.
That's right. You got that from Uncommon Goods, and you can too, everyone. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, for moms and dads, to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, and diehard football fans, to foodies, mixologists, avid gardeners like Vince. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else.
That's right. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Supplies are often limited, so shop right now before they sell out this holiday season.
And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date.
So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/podyourself. That's uncommongoods.com/podyourself for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
And we're back. This is Mad Yourself a Man, the best podcast about Mad Men out there in the world. Ashley Ray is our guest. How you doing, Ashley?
I'm good. I mean, as good as I can be, knowing that I now live in a post-Sal Mad Men world.
That's right.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's post-Sal Mad Men, and we just have to move on as if nothing happened. Speaking of which, the Sal storyline kind of like cuts in. Like, all of the storylines a little bit revolve around sexual impropriety, infidelity, and the like. Both Dawn and Betty have storylines that involve being unfaithful to their partner. Getting into Betty's, we start with the opening scene in which Betty has a dream that she is on the fainting couch and someone is just touching them titties. And you're like, oh, what is it? And then you see just for a second, just like a little flash, you see it's Henry Francis is touching them titties on the fainting couch.
He's more like Hansy Francis.
Yeah. And then Dawn wakes up and Betty wake up to a call from Connie. And Connie tells Dawn.
I love Connie as just the ultimate nightmare client.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Oh, yeah.
Because he calls and he's just like, he'll call you at 2 a.m. and he's like, I just want to talk about life. Big ideas that I have, you know. I just want to talk with someone who inspires me. And
but I also love that he basically considers you a pussy for even answering the phone. He's like,
yes.
I've heard no before, so if you're letting me do this to you,
right.
You're a pussy. Like,
yes.
You could end this and not answer the phone, but you did, because you're a pussy who wants my approval.
Yeah. He's like perfectly manipulative, but also capricious. It's,
It's great. And the phone call, this like every scene with Connie is great. It was hard to not put every clip from Dawn, from Connie.
Sorry, go ahead.
Here's him talking to Dawn at first.
It sounds like pride, but I want Hiltons all over the world, like missions. I want a Hilton on the moon. That's where we're headed.
Okay.
America is wherever we look, wherever we're going to be.
That's very good, Connie.
You're the one who said that to me.
Oh.
I guess it's not that memorable.
He's the dad that Don never had, and also the dad that no one wants, which
right.
is
yeah.
he's the kind of dad where it's like he has to domineer. Like he wants you to be a man, but his whole like demeanor is forcing you to be domed. Like he's constantly
yeah.
he's putting you in a situation where you have to defy him in order to please him, and it's clearly very confusing for Don.
Yeah. And it sucks too, because you're watching it's hard to tell with Don, because he has been put in a situation now where he is a contracted employee of this company because of Connie. So the power imbalance is now like set in stone. It's like legally set in stone. And Connie keeps doing the thing where he's trying to turn Don into his son so he could manipulate him by telling him how disappointed he is. And I don't think Don is acting the way he is in this episode because he wants to get approval. It's like he doesn't like, oh, this is, you know, goes back to my own father. I think he generally hates having a father figure.
He does. He's also trying to use it to his advantage, though.
Yes.
Like, he's trying to use Connie as his like excuse to be philandering and avoiding his family.
Yeah.
Like that's his method of like trying to re-engineer this so he has control in some way.
I think it's more about the business approval of being seen as this like genius creative director who always has the answer. We see him like demeaning Peggy and the Swedish guy when they're with their ideas and him just being like, I can't do this alone. And so I think for him to like actually have pushback and realize, wait, I did something genius and this client isn't just sucking my dick. Like, I think yeah. he's just struggling with that.
Well, say, yeah, same with the teacher where he's like, she obviously yeah. wants me. Why is she, even though like she totally has his yeah. number where she's like, I can see exactly where this is going and I don't want to do it. And he's like, yeah, but you said I'm all right, Spider.
Yeah,
like,
right. I thought you said I was all right, Spider. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I kind of like see both Connie and the teacher is like, I don't know. It's like two sides of the same coin in that, like, for him, there's something super gratifying for Don about the professional success of making this work out with Connie. And when things start going awry, he is like, well, if I can't get my pitches to work out, I need to get my dick wet somehow. So
he needs to seduce
someone. Yeah. And so if he can't do it with Connie in this episode, he does it with the teacher. And yeah, you do see Dawn using these like late nights or early mornings for the sake of trying to court this teacher. Dawn is driving. I think he's driving over to Connie's or back from. Oh no, he's driving into work early.
He can't sleep, so he's like, "I'm going to go to work at 3 a.m. Yeah, as normal people do.
Yeah,
so that's what we do.
And yeah. he sees. I'm still at this point. I still don't know the teacher's name. I'm calling her Horny Teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's running, and it looks good. I like. I like her. I'm in love with her too.
He keeps running into.
Why is she running at this time
of day? She shouldn't be running.
It's way too late for. It's too early. I don't know, but this is. There are so many serial killers at this point in time.
Yeah,
she's running. What are you doing? Very lasciviously.
Yeah.
She's well. Don keeps running into bigger and badder Dons. Like he's got Connie, who's like the better Don, and then he's got the teacher, who's the better Don, who's clearly like. Seducing him and yes. like wants to keep fucking with them.
Yeah. yeah. And he gives her a ride and they're listening to the radio and they're hearing Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. And she's, you know, kind of negging him, like just like, you know, I'm going to write it down and, you know, read it to the kids at school. Is, you know, do you think they'll understand? I think they already do understand it, you know, and like he's just watching all this and he just asks her, it's like, I can't tell if you're dumb or if you're pure, which is like, it's such a strange yeah. line. He's, you know, looking at her running at 3 a.m. and, you know, like, it just, he doesn't know how to, I guess it's because she's running game on him first, and he's almost resentful of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just like, you're dumb.
Yeah, I think anytime a woman does that with him or thinks that she's going to, like, get the best of him, he can't deal with it. That's anytime he's seen or just called out,
yeah,
he has
yeah.
a meltdown. It's, yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of petulant in the scene, and then he, like, drops her off, and she won't let him, you know, just drop her off right to the front door because, you know, he's so clearly just wants to be like, where do you live? you know, she still tells him, you know, I don't live in that nice house. I live in the back house in the upper apartment. And, yeah, so he is horny. He's tired. And, you know, he's like trying to appease Connie, and Connie keeps doing these late night calls. Meanwhile, Betty is reading this news about how Rockefeller is not going to get the nomination. And it reminds him, oh, Henry is hot. Let me write letters. So she writes a letter to him. Does anyone else read your mail? And then later Betty comes home and finds a letter back from Henry that answers, not anymore. Everybody
very horny. Sexy and, very sexy.
I mean, just like
yeah,
this
come
is
on.
This is a fun cum filled romp of an episode. Yeah. Betty then writes another letter and goes on and on about her kids and whatever, but it's really about how horny she is. And eventually Henry comes over, touches her hand, and it's just like, I had to see you. Oh, you're so hot. Oh, fuck. And then she's like, oh, no, but Carla's going to come back and see us. And then Carla comes back, and they're like, oh, we were just here not filled with cum. We were just here.
About the fundraiser.
Oh, yeah. We're going to do a fundraiser. And Carla is like looking at this obvious charade and just like, oh, God. Now I know all this. And yeah. Betty is staring daggers at her in the next scene. Like, you know, she's saying, you know, Carla works for me, not you, Sally. I control Carla's life and future. And then she dismisses Carla, you know, says, like, you can leave early. I got this. And Betty tells Dawn that they're going to do a fundraiser, which was the excuse, of course, that they made.
She goes through with it because more time with him. And yeah. Then she gets another sexy phone call with him where she gets to be all, we're going to do it.
Dude, like, and you really, you know, I don't know what Betty expected to happen. Like, he was going to come over and give a speech, and then everyone was going to leave and they were going to fuck.
Yeah.
I think it's like, she wants him to be like the big important guy and like make her important, but like she wants her friends, she doesn't just want to fuck him, she wants all her friends to also be jealous that she's fucking him,
right?
So she wants how mad she gets at the tall lady.
He's at my house.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
She gets so mad at the tall lady because she's like, this lady's tall, she's got her own job, she's coming over here instead of the guy I'm trying to fuck. And she's like, she's like diminishing her and like on separate levels.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That was great.
And she gets so mad that someone else came in his stead that she drives to his office with what you're like, is this a cake? Like, what's going on? What does she have in her hands? The secretary closes his door and she immediately throws it at him. And it's just like an empty tin box.
No, it's a box of money from the fundraiser.
Oh, is that what that was? It was a box of money? Yeah. So throws something at her and they immediately end up kissing. And then she's like, no, I can't. I'm married.
I have to go, and then runs off, and it's like.
By the way, like he works for Rockefeller, so Rockefeller is sort of like important because it's like that's what Betty gets involved with, but he's like the ultimate historical non-starter. He's like the tandem sweatshirt of politicians because he's like, hey, you know what I think America's really what America's really due for? It's the pro civil rights Republican,
right?
And it was like, no, that's not gonna work, bro. Come on,
no, you got to get a Goldwater in there.
It does not work.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you know, Henry is just like,
I can't fail the mayor. Not ever.
You know, and but his ass he is now. He does say that all the time. So they kiss, and then she's like, no, and the games continue. At this point, the cheating of, you know, Betty is like, you could not forgive, but I mean, I can forgive. I mean, listen.
I'm going to forgive.
I forgive all infractions. I understand. But like that first time, that first kiss that they had, it was in the parking lot. He had just done something really, you know, great for her, I guess. And yeah, they're kind of both, you could say, falling victim to their own, you know, libidos in that moment. In this moment, she's already engineered an emotional affair with him in which they're writing letters back and forth, secret correspondence. He is supposed to come over to her house.
My dearest Lucretia ass letters.
Yeah. And so like now she's fully cheating. She's just fully on that affair.
Fully
tip.
Cheating as she should. You go, girl. Get it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, she absolutely is well within her rights to do so.
She can't, though. She can't, like, she's too waspy.
Right. It can't be tawdry.
I mean, I would say she pretty successfully does.
Like, oh, yeah. She figures it out. I mean,
she comes out of the marriage with her new, more powerful man.
Yes, she does.
It's not because Don left her for a younger woman, which is what you think is going to happen.
Right.
True.
Yeah, she is able to get out without it being tawdry, which is what she, you know, she hates. She says to him, no. Yeah.
She's achieving peace with honor, just like Nixon in Vietnam.
Exactly. The last scene with Betty in this is Carla is listening to the story about the church burning in Birmingham, and Betty shows up and Carla changes the channel, you know, and she's like, no, you can listen to your show, and it's just like the news. And then Betty just is like, yeah, you know, that was so tragic. Kind of makes me rethink this whole civil rights thing, you know. Maybe we just aren't ready, which is God, what a perfect like encapsulation.
One lesson learned from that, but yeah.
It's okay. The perfect liberal white woman lesson, you know, which is just like, look, I'm all for like civil rights as long as like, you know, everyone's like chill about it. But if anyone is mad, if any white person is resentful of it, then clearly we shouldn't do it. We should deny rights to millions of people because people are still going to be mad about it.
It reminded me, like, this week I was in the coffee shop and I was at one of the church coffee shops because that's most of what we have here for whatever reason. And I'm like overhearing this conversation and like most of the older guys in there are like always like they only talk about the Bible. It's like always like a Bible study.
Jesus.
And this guy comes over and he's telling this other guy about like Charlie Kirk's book and like what a hero he was and like describing this book and how important it was. And the other guy was like this black guy. And I'm like, what is like he seemed to be like enjoying the conversation. But I'm like, is that really? Is he really buying this whole thing? Like, it's just so. It was like I felt awkward listening to that in the same way as I felt Betty being like, you know, I just don't think it's the time for civil rights right now.
Right. Yeah. It is weird. The I don't know. Just like the way in which Betty and I think like liberals in general and maybe anyone kind of engages with this. Kind of hoping to get affirmation, you know, like, and you just feel there's also, it comes from such a place of spite when it comes to Betty, because she's just like super hates Carla for knowing
that yeah, she's like doming her a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. She's saying, you know, we are in control. And yeah, so it is that's what happens there. To finish up what happens with Dawn. Dawn is now fully just like no sleep. He's horny. He's trying to figure out like what is this ad campaign going to be. He's driving in the middle of the night searching for her, just like fucking wow,
like a serial killer,
like a serial killer might.
Yeah, he's like the end of the Ted Bundy story where it's like, you know, where he just completely loses it and just like starts killing people with no exit strategy. Like that's kind of what he's doing with the affair here, where he's like the monster has taken hold and he doesn't give a shit anymore.
Sounds weird. Yeah, he's and I think your theory about lack of sleep is correct, because you know,
well, it's lack of sleep and he just got he got denied by Connie Hilton with his big ad campaign, which was an amazing ad campaign.
Dude.
Yeah, like, I do want to say I liked that ad campaign. Yeah.
Well, it's perfect because it's like
in Japanese, Hilton.
Yeah. Because it's like, yeah, it's finding the heart of what Americans want, which is like, oh, we just want to go somewhere else and drink soda and have burger.
Yeah. I want burger and ice water.
Burger. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fresh towel, please.
Yes. It's interesting because it's like I guess I had.
How do you say this is too spicy in
in Spanish, Hilton?
How do you say? Can I get this pasta with a different protein in Italian?
Yeah. How do I say? Can I have a doggy bag in Japanese? But yeah, like I had a I don't know I had a different take on the ad campaign because like Connie. At this point has now called Dawn over to his apartment or his, you know, flat, his loft, whatever, his kingdom at the top of a building somewhere. And he's like laying it on thick where he's just like, you know, I'm really lonely being so successful. And I kind of think of you as a son. Did you know communism's bad? We're good. And it's just like he's saying all of these like, you know, big ideas, and he's trying to convince Dawn that he thinks of him as a son, like, don't disappoint me. And Dawn is like so tired and so horny. And that ad campaign, I thought it was one of the weakest that I've seen on this show. Like,
wow.
Yeah. Well, cause I kind of looked at it as, a result of him being like just so scatterbrained, like being like, you know, lack of sleep and horny as shit. And it, like, I don't know. I thought it was a funny, how do you say hamburger? Like I was like, yeah. I don't know.
Perfect.
It's right. Yeah.
I thought it was
1960s American.
True.
That's what they want.
Yeah. I think it was fine, but it wasn't amazing. And what I love is that like Connie first compliments it like that was great, and then he asks, but where's the moon?
The moon.
and I have that clip.
Very good, but what about the moon?
Excuse me?
There's nothing about the moon.
Well, right now that's not an actual destination.
That wasn't the point.
I'm sure there's a way to fit that into this.
I'd like to speak with Don in private. You did not give me what I wanted. I'm deeply disappointed, Don.
This is a great campaign.
Your work is good. But when I say I want the moon, I expect the moon.
I love how much Connie gave him the most impossible task.
Yeah. I literally expected the moon.
Expected the moon. Ever heard of it? The moon, yeah, what's the issue?
Like
he's doing the thing like the old lady in The Simpsons at the grocery checkout where she's like, I want it all in one bag, but I don't want the bag to be too heavy.
Yes. That's exactly right. And like Dawn is pissed off because I think he sees right through what Connie is doing, which is like,
yeah.
Connie came in there saying, I'm going to find a reason to reject whatever pitch he puts out because he has to know that I am a disappointed father, and then I'll get something really good out of him. Even I don't even know if he believes he'll get something good out of him. I think he just wants to let him know who's boss.
Yeah, I don't think he cares.
Yeah, I think that's just how he thinks it should go.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be a tough father. You just
you
give him a hard time. Like, it's,
Yeah.
And for the record, I think it's a very good campaign. I don't know how much better he could have done with that.
I mean, look, I'm not in advertising.
It's just that you can throw the moon in that. How do you say hamburger on the moon? Hilton.
Yeah. Boom. And it was funny. He was just like, you know, we'll figure out a way to get the moon in there. I think that is a solution. That is a solution. Well,
that's always what you tell the client.
Yeah.
Yes, we'll figure out how to give you the moon.
We got that.
We got it.
Yeah. But these are the basic bones of it. And you have to like it. Please like it. But there is, I mean, I think for Connie, is like, even if you were to put the moon in here, it ruins the point of what I'm doing, which is to make you feel like a child who just failed his father.
Yeah.
And Don is like, you know, at this point, he's had to like fucking, you know, I think right after that, he has to like fire Sal. And then after that, he gets yelled at by Roger, who's just like, I'm putting you on notice. You're in over your head. And Don pretends to get a call from Connie, and he drives over to the horny teacher's apartment and, you know, is like, you've been flirting with me for months, you know, I want you. And she is, she's like turning him down in the, like, you know, she's also playing the game, but I think we all know that this is all going to lead to fucking.
And
then it does. And I was happy for him. And then they're in each other's arms. And then it fades out. And that is the episode. That is what happened. So.
Yeah.
A favorite scene or a least favorite scene or something that we didn't talk about. Vince?
A very subtle moment. But when Lee Garner is talking to Harry on the phone, and Harry's like, are you enjoying the city? And he's like, yeah, there's, you know, so much to do. And he just holds up his whiskey glass and like looks at it while he's in the hotel room by himself. Like, there's so much to do here in New York. Like, sit in my hotel room alone and get really shit faced.
That was great.
Least favorite, again, two coughs, I would have been good. You don't need to cough the entire scene.
You and this fucking cough thing.
It was awful.
I loved it.
I don't even remember the coughs, really.
Oh, man.
Not memorable.
Vince remembers all mouth sounds and or throat sounds.
I was just losing my
mind.
Like, why is he still coughing? There's, like, people talking in the foreground. Oh, my goodness.
You're someone who thinks porn is too gross because there's too many sounds.
No, it's more the spitting and the gagging. I could do with that.
What did I say?
Spit.
That's normal. Everybody likes that except for you, Vince.
I guess.
Everybody normal. Ashley, a favorite scene or a least favorite scene or something we didn't talk about?
I kind of wanted to talk a bit more about Peggy's ad campaign.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of was curious if you thought that would be a better one.
That one was terrible.
I kind of agree.
I thought
with
that was terrible. Like, with the, like, we don't know what this is with the window. Yeah. I also like
Dawn's comment where she's like, "Well, that was your idea," and he's like, "Yeah, it doesn't mean it was good,
right?"
I was spitballing.
And then when the Swedish guys are like, "Yeah, look, ours is great. You know, we're gonna do this. We're everywhere you are." He's like, "Who's we?"
Right,
Hilton. Am I gonna leave these tiny hotels? And so I just, anytime we get to see the creative process, see all the writers, and Peggy time is always good for me.
Oh, yeah. I loved Peggy time. I really did love Dawn saying to, I think, I forget what his name is, Sven or some shit.
Smitty. Oh.
No, wait, no, it's Smitty
and Kurt.
Okay, Kurt. Who's the foreign one?
I thought Smitty was the foreign one.
Smitty's the foreign
one. Okay. When he says to Smitty, you know, the more I understand you, the less I like your idea.
The less impressed I am by what you have to say. Oh, so good.
That was...
Actually, Kurt is the foreign one. I'm
Look at that. Wow.
Wow.
Now we know.
Expectations there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I loved that. I like watching him take out all of his frustration on his staff, on the creative staff, especially since it's so clear a lot of it is him beating himself up, where he's just, when he says to Peggy, you know, yeah, just because it's my idea doesn't mean it's any good. Like, he's already been like whittled down by Connie to the point of him being like, I don't know, I guess I suck. I fucking suck at this.
Yeah.
And you suck, thinking, trying to impress me by selling me something I already said. Fuck you. Yeah. Oh, it's so great. Oh,
I'm just such a genius doing this all on my own. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, Donnie boy. Of course.
Yes, you are the only genius. And yeah, if I had to give this episode a letter grade, you know what? It's one of the best goddamn TV shows I've ever seen in my fucking life. I'm giving it a B+. Vince, what would you give it if you had to give it a letter grade? Mm-hmm.
It's all B+.
What? That's crazy. Yay. Ashley Ray, if you had to give this episode a letter grade, what would you give it?
Giving it a B-.
Whoa, we're B-ing up in here. Yeah. Not the best, but you know, we have to round it out. You know, we have to take, okay, so you have 2 B+'s plus a B-. That equals a B+ episode of Mad Men and an A++ episode of Mad Yourself, a Man. Ashley Ray, thank you so much for coming on and talking Mad Men with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Of course. Where can people find you?
At the Ashley Ray, or listen to TV I Say, my podcast, which is back and now it's on YouTube, so you can watch it.
Oh, that's amazing.
At TV I Say Pod. And
I love it.
And thank you.
We'll put a link to the YouTube and to the audio version of the podcast in the show notes. And also follow you on all of the social medias, Ashley Ray. Please follow, because you know, you post your stand-up dates and you have a special that is out. What is the name of your special?
Yeah, it is a Cracked special. I think it's just Cracked, on Ashley Ray on Cracked.
Yeah.
It's a little 10-minute special. You can go listen to my album, Ice Cream Money, wherever you want to go do that.
That's right. All of the links are in the description. Ashley Ray, thank you so much for coming on the pod.
Thanks for having me for such an important episode, and RIP Sal.
RIP Sal. Pour one out for Sal.
Yeah.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s guys.
Patreon.com/Fraudcast. The $8 tier gets you a prep school name. It's a shout out with a prep school name, Vince.
Mm.
We have two of them. We have two names this week, and you need to come up with a prep school name for them. Can you do it?
I sure can. I think I got my prep school naming cable knit sweater tied over my shoulders.
Ooh, beautiful. And here they are. First one, ooh, it's a lady, Lauren Millie.
Hey, it's Lauren. Hey, I'm Lauren here.
Stop in the name of the Lauren. I don't know.
Oh, you think I'm not going to use Miley as the source of my nicknames?
Oh, Miley, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We're calling, what's that guy's name? We're calling him Billy Ray.
Billy Ray, yes, yes, yes. That's, I was like, achy breaky heart. Billy Ray.
Miley Ray Lauren.
There we go. Billy Ray, we'll go with your first thought. and also, I always love it. I always love it when there's a woman who wants a shout out. It's I over the weekend when I did a show in New York, a Fraudcast/Pod Yourself listener came up to me, and it was a woman, and I was just like, thank God. every time a woman listens to this, I'm like, good, thank you, know, because sometimes I'm like, what are we, just two dudes talking about our dicks the whole time? But we still have appeal to the fairer sex. Okay, next is JD Sorrentino.
Hey, I'm JD Sorrentino over here, because this guy's putting me to sleep. We're going to call him Snorrentino.
Oh, I like it. Snorrentino. Hey, if you're having trouble sleeping,
Head on down to Snorantino's and get yourself a Casper mattress. I don't know.
You can call him Sleepy for short. Hey, it's my cousin Sleepy.
Hey, it's my Italian cousin Sleepy. Yes. Speaking of Sleepy, I need to get some sleep. That R is the nicknames. Those are your prep school names for this week. If you want to get one for yourself, you go to patreon.com/broadcast. $8 tier or more gets you a shout out. If you haven't heard your name and you're like, hey, I did this tier a long time ago, what the fuck? Please let us know if you have slipped through the cracks. Fratcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all. If Salvatore had a potion that he could take today, that made everybody less certain that Salvatore's gay, he'd look at a Rowan Swaggy, make the women swoon. Loves pussy, pussy, and boobs too. Too bad he's clearly gay. You catch him cruising at Shore Road, Greenwich waterfront, South Beach, Staten Island, Pelham Bay in the Bronx, all over Manhattan, Yonkers and upstate. Salvatore's gone cruising, 'cause he's clearly gay. Betty planning an affair, gonna leave Don soon. Donnie working for Hilton, Connie wants the moon. Treats Donnie like family, but not in a good way. Sally's teacher is jogging, anyway Sal's gay. He catch a cruising at Prospect Park, Sunset and Zuccotti. That park next to Retro Fitness, a gym in Bayside, Queens. All over Long Island, on Brooklyn's M train. Salvatore's gone cruising, 'cause he's clearly gay. Yo, what up? It's Matt Lieb. I worked really hard to find all the gay cruising scene. Man, my Google is fucked up. I just went to New York, too. If my wife sees all of the Google searches for gay cruising scene in New York / Brooklyn,
because it's clearly
I am really gay. I'm going to have to answer a lot of questions.
Because it's clearly gay.
I mean, this sounds to anyone else who doesn't listen to this show like an insane cover. Like, oh no, I looked it up because I was doing a parody song. And I don't think anyone is going to fall for it, you know? But it's true. It will sound a lot like I was Googling places to fuck men. But, I mean, you guys know. I put work into this. Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
No, I'm Matt Lieb.
And this is Vince Mancini. Why did you do this to me? I don't
know. Just seen how you'd react.
Well, I did great.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to talk less.
I'm always saying that.